Yo, welcome back everybody to another episode of the Isaiah K Podcast. Welcome back. So, we got a lot to really unpack and cover. Since I have last talked to you guys, DeAndre Hopkins has finally found a team. He's going to sign with the Tennessee Titans. We're going to talk about that, give you my thoughts and opinions on that particular move, and then also making, you know, I think the biggest story out right now is really the running back position and how some people think it's underpaid. The running backs, you know, they're going on social media and talking about it. So we'll talk about state of the running backs. That's what we'll call it. We'll say we're going to be talking about the state of the running back position currently in the NFL right now. This is going to be a NFL heavy episode. Buckle your seatbelts up. Let's get into it. Let's get ready. I'm gonna aim for this episode not to be too long, but who knows? We'll see. But let's get into it. Let's not waste any more time. You guys know how we give it up on the IKP. Welcome back. First and foremost, I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah Kitt of the Isaiah Kitt Podcast. Shouts out to everyone that is listening. Shouts out to everyone that is streaming and downloading this podcast on whatever DSP, any streaming platform that you may use. Shouts out to you. Shouts out to all the first-time listeners. If you are a first-time listener, welcome. If you are a regular listener, welcome back. Glad to see that you've made it back. And let's get into it. Recently, on Tuesday, I think it was, that was the NFL franchise tag deadline, right? That was the deadline for any free agent, any player that was still trying to negotiate a long-term deal. That was the deadline. And the running backs, the crop of running backs that were at play for a long-term deal, which most of us figured they would not get, right? But Tony Pollard, Saquon Barkley, and Josh Jacobs, those three guys were, those were the running backs that were on the deadline in terms of trying to get a long-term deal done. Now, obviously, Tony Pollard, the Cowboys had just, they just went down that road with Ezekiel Elliott and giving him a long-term deal. And they saw how that kind of came back to bite them in the butt. So it was a kind of like a no-brainer that Tony Pollard wasn't going to receive any type of long-term offer. So the franchise tag, mind you, the franchise tag is, I think, roughly, it's valued roughly around, like, just a little bit more than $10 million, I think. Yes, I have it. So it's valued a little bit more than $10 million. So that's $10 million guaranteed straight to Tony Pollard. That same deal was available. That same franchise tag value was on the table for Saquon and Josh Jacobs. Those guys, I don't think they've signed it. I think they're gonna probably do a holdout. So, like I said, Pollard, you know, not obviously he was not going to get that deal, right? He wasn't going to get that deal for the Cowboys. Now here's my thing with Saquon Barkley, and I'm gonna start with Saquon Barkley and then I move to the Raiders and Josh Jacobs. But let's just talk about the running backs just in general. And I don't always fall, like, in sports, certain media members and people within the media, they create this notion that, like, all these players are just getting screwed, right? And I don't always fall for the okey-doke of, or falling under the umbrella of, man, this guy's getting screwed. You have to pay him. You have to pay him. And with Saquon Barkley, in his particular situation, in fact, he has not been getting screwed. He hasn't been underpaid. I think when you actually factor in the games that he's played and how much money he's made because he was picked number two overall in his draft class, you would probably say he was overpaid. Especially the times where he went MIA and he was hurt, right? You could make the argument that he was overpaid. But I think this is the harsh reality and the harsh truth about running backs and the current state of running backs. And it's just simply this. First, running backs are easily replaceable. There are countless guys all throughout the league, year in, year out basis, at that position, who are day three guys. They're not like highly drafted. They're not first or second round guys. Sometimes they're day three guys, and they're starters. So the position is easily replaceable. It's not as, it's really, really hard to find a really good left tackle. It's really, really hard. It's when you strike gold on a great defensive end like a Joey Bosa or a Nick Bosa or Micah Parsons, you, like, when you strike gold, you pay those guys, right? Like, it's really hard to find a great quarterback, right? We always talk about it. Really hard. But the running back position, first, it's easily replaceable. When you're, like, I think this is simple business ethics and simple business, like, just basics, 101 and supply and demand, right? So not only is that position easily one of the most easily replaceable positions in football, not only that, but, and there's the fact that, number two, injury. A lot of these running backs, it's a really dangerous position. And so I second with the players in terms of them wanting to get those long-term deals and, you know, have that financial comfortability, right? I totally get that because of the risk that comes with playing the position. But from the team's perspective, it is just simply not good business if the Giants were to just give Saquon Barkley 4 years over $60 million. That's just a bad business deal. That's a bad business deal. It's just bad. So, and usually and typically, if the business deal is so one-sided where one side of the negotiating party is just like either on the fence or they're like even questioning, like, is this a good idea? It's probably not a good idea. And that is where essentially every running back falls into. That's not good for business. It's just in a salary cap league, in a salary cap strapped league, I already talk about how we put a premium and how we like, it's so difficult to find a great left tackle, so difficult to find a franchise caliber quarterback. Right, I think the Netflix series with featuring Patrick Mahomes, Kirk Cousins, and Marcus Mariota. I think if you did not understand how difficult it is to be a good quarterback or to just be a quarterback, you see the difficulties of it. And just first, physically, mentally, like how much it really takes and how hard it is. It's the hardest position in sports. And I like the fact that it documents the best quarterback, a good quarterback in Kirk Cousins, and then a guy, Marcus Mariota, who has some tools, but he's trying to, he just struggles to put them all together. That's literally what that's the premium position in the sport. So when I see, when people are complaining about Daniel Jones, they like, well, Daniel Jones got all that money. It's like, well, it's much more difficult to find a quarterback. And granted, if you're asking me, is Daniel Jones a $80 million guaranteed caliber type of quarterback? No, I don't think he is. No. But his position really makes it hard to pivot. It really makes it hard to pivot. It really does. So, like, and granted, you know, a GM could say, hey, Saquon, we give you 2 years, $27.5 million guaranteed, or $28 million guaranteed. But teams don't want to do that, fully guaranteed. But teams don't want to do that. Though teams don't like those short-term guaranteed deals because it messes makes the cap number look funky. Teams typically want to do the long-term deals where they can either backload the contract, they can put a lot of that money in the back end of the contract so the cap number looks respectable. But the whole thing about the running back position is it's easily replaceable and the risk factors of injury, right? That's just what it is. And with Saquon Barkley, I mean, really good player. A good player, right? I would say he's, but I don't think there's any GM, especially the Giants, I don't think there's any team that's going to give him $40 to $50 million a year. That's just not going to happen. That's just not going to happen, okay? And for a long time, this has been my thing with, I think this is the formula the team should do. Been saying it for some time now. But you should draft a running back. Step one, you draft a running back. You play the running back. If he turns out to be good, then you franchise that. You franchise tag that running back, and then you draft another running back. I think, like, in terms of the salary cap strap league, the way how this thing goes, the Super Bowl contenders, the really elite teams, the cream of the crop, they ain't paying for running backs. It's just not, that's the harsh reality of the business, but they're not paying running backs. And time again, either it's with when running backs get paid, you know what happens when running backs get paid? The moment the ink doesn't even get dry, and I literally can pull up a list of running backs. The moment they get paid, They get hurt. And what did I say? The two reasons. Easily replaceable and injury. Granted, look at this. Christian McCaffrey. And here's the funny thing. I like Christian McCaffrey. I like him. I think he's one of the best. He's one of the elite players in football. But he signed an enormous deal with Carolina. The deal was so enormous, the Panthers couldn't even keep him healthy, and they traded him, right? Well, that same GM and that same coach that gave him that big time deal, yeah, they got fired, right? But here's the funniest thing. The funniest thing is they traded him to the 49ers, and then they got instantly better at running the football. How? You ask yourself how? Literally, Tony Pollard, the example. He should be the prime example of, like, especially this year, like, why you don't pay backs? Why you don't pay running backs? Cowboys signed Zeke, gave Zeke filthy big-time deal, right? Last 2 years, ask yourself, who's been a better player? Ezekiel Elliott or Tony Pollard? Ask yourself, who's been a better player? I think we all know the answer, but if you want to simply find out who the Cowboys think the better player is, simply look at who's on their roster right now. Is it Tony Pollard or Ezekiel Elliott? And ask yourself, why isn't Ezekiel Elliott on the roster anymore? Why did they cut him, right? Ask yourself that. Tyler Allegheri, 1,000-yard back. He started in 7 games last year. Guess where he got drafted? 5th rounder. Aaron Jones. He was a breakout player a few years ago. Guess where he got drafted? 5th rounder. Isaiah Pacheco. Super Bowl hero. He played a critical role in the Super Bowl for the Chiefs and really throughout the season. 7th rounder. He played over Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who was a late 1st rounder a couple years ago. So I think time and time again, I mean, even with a guy like Josh Jacobs, who he hasn't made on his rookie contract, he didn't make as much money is Saquon Barkley because he was a later 1st-round pick. But the Raiders, they didn't exercise his 5th-year option. Okay. But if you're the Raiders, granted, you would probably do that differently now. And hindsight is 2020. Obviously, in July is June, what? It's July 8th. It's July 19th, 2023. It's easier to say you made the mistake in it's easier. Hindsight is 2020. But if I'm the Raiders, my two best players is Davante Adams and Max Crosby. I have those two guys on the contract. If Jimmy Garoppolo is not healthy to start the season, or if he's not even healthy in the beginning of training camp, we're probably going to be bad. We're probably going to be bad with or without Josh Jacobs. If we are bad, okay. If we're bad enough where we can stink and we can get like a Caleb Williams or a Drake May, I want to have as much flexibility financially as possible with that caliber of young quarterback coming into my franchise. So me paying Josh Jacobs $40 million probably isn't the right move. And even if, say, Jimmy Garoppolo, and miraculously he's healthy and he's ready to go, and say the Raiders, you know, they're decent. Okay. I got Josh Jacobs on a 1-year deal on the franchise tag, and that's just that. But in terms of the team perspective, there is no incentive of them paying a running back long term. There is no high end ceiling for the team to pay running backs long term deals. And I can care less. Like, if I, you know, like, I'm not trying to say it like that, but I'm saying I'm not the one that's going to be judging people's money and pockets, right? But this is the business model of the NFL. In every company, every industry has like a business model, right? And there's certain positions that are valued more because they come at a premium. There's other positions that's not valued as much. It's simple business 101. In every industry, there is a particular role or position that may feel like they're underpaid. But I'm telling you, a $10 million wage, I think a lot of people will be like, where do I sign? So I'm not that guy that says, man, that science teacher should be making the same as much as like LeBron. Like, no, no, no. Science teacher can't run for, to, you know, like, no. Like, no. I'm not that guy. But this is the predicament, and this is the value and of the running back position. And there is no high-end ceiling for teams paying running back long-term deals. And it's been proven for some time now. There's empirical, statistical data that backs it up. And the players should fight over this in the franchise tag. They should over the next bargaining agreement, next collective bargaining agreement. But that's my take. Look, we'll move on to DeAndre Hopkins signing with the Titans. So speaking of money and deals, DeAndre Hopkins, he's a Tennessee Titan. He finally decided to go with the Titans. The particulars of the deal, it's a little uncertain, but I think he's making about $12 million with a chance to make about $15 million with some incentives. And I give you my thoughts on from in terms of DeAndre Hopkins' perspective, the Titans' perspective, and so forth, right? And my thought process in terms of Hopkins is I thought he wanted to compete for a Super Bowl. So you guys know that I was giving suggestions like, hey, I would, if I'm Hopkins, I'd have made all the money. If I really want to go pay for a Super Bowl contender, I just go to Kansas City. I would, you know, pay me $3 million. And hopefully my incentives, we can build those incentives up, and it gets about $6-8 million. And I go out, I'm the second option behind Kelce, and we try to win a Super Bowl. That was my thought process, right? So teams like Kansas City, Buffalo with great quarterbacks, a chance to win. I thought that would be like the move. But those teams could not sniff the offer the Titans gave him, right? And I mean, let's just be honest. Kansas City is essentially, they're like on scholarship to make the AFC title game, right? But Hopkins clearly, he clearly prioritizes money as his top priority. And hey, I am not mad at that. We just got done talking about the running back position and how I understand it from a running back's perspective, how they may feel in terms of like, hey, it's a lot of risk that goes into playing the position. So they want to make as much money and have as much financial stability as possible, right? I get that. So like, but like at this point, the Chiefs, they're like a shoe-in. Like they're on scholarship to make the AFC Championship game, like on a yearly basis. They're on scholarship. Every year Mahomes that he's been starting in his career, he's made the AFC Championship game. He's at least made it there. So, but I understand it. But in Hopkins, he's made $111 million in his career. So money is the driver of his career. But when I think he made a comment like, you know, he wants to compete for a Super Bowl. And he's like, you know, when you make comments like the quarterback matters, and then you go to Ryan Tannehill, like, we can't, like, you can't say that. And that's my whole thing. If money is the driving factor, trust me, just tell us that. Just say that from the start. But don't make the comment like, hey, quarterbacks matter. Because if they did matter, you would have went to, like, you know, you would have took the $3 million that Kansas City could have offered you, play with the best quarterback in football, and have a chance to win the Super Bowl. So that's just my whole thing. But I get it. I get it from a player's perspective. You know, football, you can't play football, you know, well, I was going to say until 40, but Tom Brady kind of, but you get my point. You can't play football forever, right? So I get it. But, you know, money was the driving factor. And from the Titans' perspective, just to really bring this thing together, here's my thing. I think Mike Vrabel is a really, really good coach. And the Titans GM, their previous GM got fired in the middle of the season. And typically when that type of stuff happens, the coach that's in place, especially if he's a really good coach, which Vrabel is, he's going to have a lot of juice and a lot of say-so to whoever the new GM is. Whoever that new GM is, that coach is going to have a lot of juice, and it's going to feel like a co-executive ship, right? It's going to have a lot of say. And I think looking at the state of the Titans, you know, Ryan Tannehill, this is probably going to be his last year as the Titans starting quarterback. Depending on how bad they are, if they come out the gates just really bad, they might even play Will Levis or Malik Willis. So who knows, right? So this might be Tannehill's last year. Derrick Henry, I wouldn't say declining, but he might be on the wrong side. He might be on the wrong side of his career. Their passing game wasn't particularly great last year. Their division is not tough, but they're not the best team in their division. And their defense, it's not bad, but it's not, I wouldn't call it like the steel curtain, right? So my whole thing is, I think Mike Vrabel is a coach who isn't ready to admit that, like, maybe we should take one big step back so we can take a couple steps forward. You know, like that thing. You know what they say? You gotta take one step back in order to take a couple steps forward. And I think that's the thing where the Titans and Mike Vrabel are kind of struggling at. Because this DeAndre Hopkins move is like, it's a move that's like, we're in the fashion of winning now. But how many of you guys are picking the Titans to make the playoffs? Literally. Man, remember, I did an episode on how deep the AFC is. There's seven spots. If I'm betting my money, I'll probably bet that the Titans won't make the playoffs. I don't think they're the best team in their division. Now, Mike Vrabel you can't convince Mike Vrabel of that, right? But I would just throw out there that the Jaguars, they have a young emerging quarterback who we were all super high on. He showed some flashes and showed some light, especially in the second half of last year. Like post November and on, Trevor Lawrence looked really, really damn good. You match that up with they're getting Calvin Ridley back, who's still in his rookie deal, right? That's a fun fact. And then also, they have a Super Bowl winning head coach. So the Jags, who won the division last year, albeit it was a 9-8 record that got it done, I would say the Jaguars are pointing their arrows kind of pointing upward. And like I said, the division is crappy, right? So could the Titans finish second in the division? Yes, right? Could they be the second best team? Yes. But are they a playoff team? And I think that's the thing with Vrabel, where this move signifies that they're still like, this is a win now move, but I don't think the Titans are I don't think the state of their roster is or signifies they're trying to win now or this team is a bona fide contender. I just don't see that. I don't think they're in that. I don't think they're there. I think the Jaguars are better. And that's just one team that I keep mentioning them because that's the team that's in their division. But don't let me have to remind you of the deep gauntlet of the AFC. So when I'm looking at this move, I think this is from, like I said, DeAndre Hopkins. Clearly it was about the money. Cool. I'm cool with that. Just tell us, just say that it's about the money. But his move, his actions showed it. But then also with the Titans standpoint, I really just think Vrabel, this is the sign of a coach having a little bit too much power and too much say-so. Because I think the best move for the Titans in this predicament that they're in is trying to reload and rebuild and just stink for a year. Just stink for a year. Like the Rams, you know, they won the Super Bowl. It cost them majorly, big time. And they just stink last year. They stink. But McVay, you know, retooling to the draft. Maybe not this year with the Rams. Maybe they're not a playoff team this year. But the Rams, under McVay, I don't think they're going to be sucking for, you know, continuously, right? And I think that's the same ploy that the Titans should, that's the same move that the Titans should try to make. Because I think in the NFL, the worst position you can be in is winning your division at 9-8 or something like that, and you not having a chance to win a playoff game. Because best case scenario for the Titans, they win their division. Let's say they win their division at 9-8. Cool. They're the fourth seed. You have to play a fifth-seeded Baltimore Ravens team. You have to play a fifth-seeded New York Jets team. You have to play a fifth-seeded Miami Dolphins team. How is that going to work, right? I think, like, the best-case scenario is them win their division at 9-8 and not winning a playoff game. That's their ceiling. I don't know. I feel like it's just, I think it's time for the Titans to try to admit, like, it's like, let's start admitting that, like, hey, we need to rebuild. We need to suck for a year. And then we'll just come back and we'll try to retool and rebuild. But I think this DeAndre Hopkins move, it cool, you know, not like super huge on it, but you guys get where both sides are coming from. Titans still think they're in winning mode. DeAndre Hopkins, clearly, he said the quarterback matters. He ended up with Ryan Tannehill. I can assure you, The quarterback did not matter. The $12 million did. And for the Patriots, oh boy. This has to be an indictment. And I was just talking about how the Titans really, you know, I don't think they're going to be that good this year. But, and I kind of said, hey, you know, DeAndre Hopkins went to Ryan Tannehill. He's probably like, Ryan Tannehill or Mac Jones with the Patriots. Okay, maybe. And I think that kind of, I think this kind of shows, nobody's, I don't think a lot of people's talking about it. This kind of shows the fall from grace. And I always say this. With these all-time legendary coaches such as Bill Belichick, the Greg Popovich, like, I don't think the reason why, like, Popovich hasn't really done much since post-Duncan and Kawhi, obviously. Belichick, two out of the last three years, he's finished under 500, hasn't been great, right? Since Brady's left. I don't think Bill Belichick, as a football mind and football coach, I don't think he's gotten dumber. That doesn't happen. Like these guys don't get dumber. I think they just get stuck in their ways. And time again, I think Belichick's his stoic demeanor and mindset and his inability to be flexible in adapting to change is continuously hurt the Patriots. And the Patriots simply can't sell offense. They can't sell offense because the Titans, it ain't the Titans are all that spectacular and they have a star court. Like, no. Titans are in a honestly a similar predicament as the Patriots, you know. Really good coaches. They're, you know, the coaches are going to keep them afloat, but are they really playoff teams? That's like, they're in the same boat. And the mere fact that the Patriots lost out on DeAndre Hopkins, because I think actually, I thought the Patriots, if they were able to get DeAndre Hopkins, I think they could have done a little bit more than what the Titans can do. Given the fact that Belichick is a defensive genius, given the fact that Bill O'Brien is now the offensive coordinator with Mac Jones, given the fact that you add and you give Mac Jones an actual target in terms of, like, I don't know. I don't know. I think time and time again, all of these moves, Devontae Parker, he was dead last in separation. In terms of creating separation as a receiver, he was dead last. The Patriots re-signed him and gave him a contract extension. Like, Juju Smith-Schuster, productive for Kansas City this past year and helped them capture a Super Bowl championship, but the Patriots, they overpaid him. They overpaid him. So time and time again, and honestly, you think about it, that's what the Patriots, for years, when they were winning Super Bowls with Tom and Belichick, for years, those were the type of deals that they were doing. They would get, you know, some veteran, get them on a cheap deal. They'd be productive. They'd help them win Super Bowls. And then some team in free agency overpays. They just overpay. That's now what the Patriots doing. They're now getting a guy, overpay. Like, I think time and time again, I'm gonna continue to say it. I know people don't like it. I have a lot of Boston listeners and Patriot fans listen. I'm gonna say it time and time again. Belichick, his inability to adapt to this new wave of the NFL in terms of offense, in having some type of special skilled guys on the outside, it's going to continue to hurt the Patriots. And at this point, they cannot sell offense. Point blank, period. They can't. So I had an interesting thought looking at college football landscape, right? And I was thinking, with the merger of these conferences, like, or not the merger of these conferences, but certain teams leaving certain conferences, it had me thinking. And we're going to talk more college football as well, as we're getting closer and closer. But it made me, I have a thought. And this is just a thought, somewhat a prediction. I don't know. I might be right, might be wrong. I'm going out on a limb here. And I was born in 2001. And I've been watching college football for a long time. And I always thought it was kind of weird how this happened. Growing up watching college football, studying college football, you know, the big time notable programs are the big time notable programs, right? But there's one particular program that was once a powerhouse and a huge brand. And as I've continued to grow and get old, like, they've just disappeared. That was Nebraska. The Nebraska Cornhuskers used to be a powerhouse. I mean, a powerhouse college football program. So I started thinking, I'm like, how the hell did Nebraska go from one of the premier college football brands in the country, in the sport, to now just, they're an afterthought, right? Like, no, nobody, when we're talking about great college football programs, nobody brings up Nebraska. But then you look at Nebraska's history, you're like, damn, they won all these championships? What the hell? It made me think, Nebraska, how did they lose their juice? How did they just disappear? they just went into the ether. The state didn't produce great high school prospects and great high school football players. So they had to convince damn near every kid that came to their school to become a Cornhusker. Then I started thinking, when did this downfall started happening to Nebraska? Oh, they left the Big 12. They joined the Big 10. Okay. Then what else happened? They lost a legendary coach. And I tell you, Nebraska, they just can't get the coach right. I'm going to tell you guys this. I'm going out on a limb. And this can be a scorching hot take. What if the Oklahoma Sooners are going down that same path? Like, think about it. What if they're going down that same path? The state of Oklahoma, they don't produce great high school prospect, great high school kids. The state, not a lot of great high school prospects. So OU has to really go outside of their state and compete with the likes of the LSUs, the Georgias, the Alabamas, the Texas, the USCs, the Ohio's. They have to compete with these schools. Okay. What else is Oklahoma doing soon? They're joining a new conference. What happened with Nebraska was they left the Big 12, which means they left that Texas area. Obviously, Texas has a lot of great high school football players. OU is now going to the SEC, where the competition is going to be stiffer, and you have to now convince those kids that grew up Alabama fans, LSU fans, Auburn fans, Georgia fans, Tennessee fans. You have to now convince them to become a Sooner, but you're joining the SEC. Okay. And then what just happened with OU in the past 2 years? They lost a really, really good coach in Lincoln Riley. Who did they hire? Brent Venables. They hired, in an offensive heavy era, they hired a defensive coach. Now, remember what I told you guys. My personal preference and my reasoning and my thought process as to why Lincoln Riley left Oklahoma was kind of similar as to why Ryan Kelly left Notre Dame. Because when Notre Dame and when Oklahoma, when they've had to face off and play the likes of a Georgia and a Clemson and a Alabama, it was clear as day that Lincoln Riley and Ryan Kelly, both, when they went up against those type of schools with their when Riley was at OU and when Kelly was at Notre Dame, they had the inferior players. They had the inferior players easily. It's very hard to convince kids to go up to South Bend, especially in Notre Dame with the strict academic policy. It's a harder sell. It's a harder sell when you got to convince kids to come to OU and you're joining the SEC. It's a harder sell. You know what's an easier sell? Come to LSU. Come to Southern California at SC. That's the easier sell. Be careful. Oklahoma, big time brand, huge college football brand, national power. Do not be surprised if Oklahoma turns into Nebraska. They just disappear. And what happened to Nebraska? There's a lot of similarities. Same thing that's happening to OU currently. I'm going to end it off right here. Hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. I will be back with you guys on the weekend to tap in. Always remember, two choices, one decision. Peace, deuces. I'm out.